Okay, so one of the topics that keeps coming up in different studios, and therefore we have to tackle it, is the question of arts. It says chovet gavra, chovet mana, chovet gavra, chovet talet, meaning, well, we'll see what it means, but simply speaking, though we'll have to qualify this, does the obligation devolve on the person, or does it devolve on the beged, on the clothing? So the Gemara explicitly speaks about this in two places. Maybe we'll do this backwards, because really the main sugya is the one on Membet, and the one on Mem Aleph is a little bit secondary to that. So let's start with the Gemara on Membet. And we saw that this affected the way we understood the, and that's why we ended up cutting off the last few minutes of Ksut Laila, right? That a lot of that, night, day, might hang on this sugya, but until you've done this sugya, you can't really understand it. So there's going to be a bit of conversation between sugyas. So the main sugya is this sugya on Membet Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, let's take it. You want to take it, Daniel? Rav Nachman.
Yeah. You want to
go on Membet? Let's start with the one on Membet, yeah. That's really the main sugya. Right, Rav Nachman, Ashkechei.
Ada bar Hava Rami Shuti Bekamavar. So he attached strings.
So he first said, Rav Nachman found Rav Ada bar Hava, and what he was doing was he was putting tzitzis on his clothes.
And he made a bracha on it.
What bracha?
The bracha was lasso
tzitzit, meaning on the creation of the chefta shel tzitzit. Right?
Yilema?
So Amarlei. He said to my tzitzei shomani hachi mazeh, right? He's made fun of him. What the heck did I just hear?
Amar Rav, tzitzis ain tzuyuch habracha. Tzitzis don't need a bracha. Meaning, Rashi says that when you're making them.
Correct. Meaning, v'shat atziah, because that's the context. You don't have to make a bracha when you make tzitzis. You make a bracha when you
put them on.
Wear tzitzis.
Ki yinoch nafsheh, when he died.
When Rav Huna died,
okay. Al Rav Chista le Mirma the Rav Adarav.
Right. So Rav Chista got up. He got up, and he wanted to pose a contradiction between two positions of Rav. Right. The Rav Adarav. One position of Rav on the other.
Umi Amar Rav. Tzitzis ain't tzuyuch habracha. Tzitzis don't need a bracha.
No. Does Rav really hold that tzitzis don't need a bracha, meaning in the creation? Now, conceptually, let's try and understand this conceptually. What is the assumption? Why would one think that you do need a bracha on the creation of tzitzit, and why would you think you don't need a bracha on the creation of tzitzit?
Because the pasuk says lasso. The pasuk says lasso.
Well, let's push it. So that's the pasuk. But what is it? What's the conceptual model that's being set up?
Well, when you're making the tzitzit, that's when you complete the actual...
Well, so there's different reasons why you might think it, right? One is to say, as we'll see, the Gemara is going to say, is the mitzvah to wear tzitzit or is the mitzvah to have tzitzit? The alternative is to say no. Even if you think the mitzvah is to wear tzitzit, if there's also a value in the creation of this object, then you make a bracha on it. I mean, you could admit that the main mitzvah is to wear it and still think that it's halachically significant to create it, and therefore you make a bracha there, perhaps, as well. And that might be because the pasuk says, Vasulam Tzitzit. We've talked about this possibility before, that we talked about this in Gardumin, right? That perhaps the reason that by Gardumin we say that tzitzis is kasher, if you created it in a proper size and then some of it is cut, is because since there's a value to creating it, it takes on a chalos, it takes on a status when it's created, and therefore that status might continue even if it's not the right size anymore. So, but the assumption, therefore, of saying a bracha on it at least says that there is a status to the object of tzitzit, and not only is it valuable when you wear it. So the Gemara says, okay, if that's the case, if conceptually speaking, there's a status to making it, so then, Daniel, what other things might be true in addition to the bracha? How else would you know that maybe there's a status to the creation of the object itself? What else?
You'd have to make it on every form of garment.
Well, that's what we're going to get to. That's a klei kufsa. But more generically speaking, we've seen this, that once you talk about the object itself having a status, that means there might be standards in terms of how you make it. Lishma, remember we talked about, right? So here the Gemara introduces one of them, which is another nafka mina might be, who can make tzitzis? Right? Does it matter? I mean, if you think that all that matters is wearing it, so maybe it doesn't matter who makes it. But if suddenly we see limitations,
we need like the people who are obligated.
Exactly. So therefore, the Gemara says, "Daber el bit." So I'm a Rav. Minayin the tzitzit bovei kol chavim sheep sula. How do you know that a non-Jew who makes tzitzit, it's invalid? Now, what does that indicate? What's the Gemara conceptually saying? If a non-Jew can't make it, that means that the creation of the tzitzit is halachically significant, and that's why we care who makes the tzitzit. Now, we have to get into this sugya. What's the obvious question you'll have to ask? When it says that a non-Jew can't make it, that could be a stand-in for one of two things. That could either be a stand-in for non-Jews, i.e. people who are not chayav in mitzvot, or it could be a stand-in for
people who are not chayav in
tzitzit, nafkamina being
women.
Women, thank you. And that's why Tosfos says, that's why Tosfos here asks the question, can women make tzitzit? This is the sugya, right? This is the sugya, is can women make it? But the conceptual question is, when the Gemara says, okay, there's clearly some value to creating the chevtzah shel tzitzit, that's why there's a limitation on non-Jews making it, what is that limitation? What is the category? Is it barei chiyuv in tzitzit, or is it people who are chayav in mitzvot in general? So the Gemara says, okay, shenemar daber b'nei Yisrael vasu lehem tzitzit, b'nei Yisrael yasu. Jews have to make them. And then he says, "Vaha my rumya." Why is this a question? Right? The Gemara says, "I don't understand." You just said there's a contradiction. Why is there a contradiction? Statement one: don't make a bracha when you make tzitzit. Statement two: non-Jews can't make tzitzit. Why is that a contradiction? Right? The Gemara says, "I don't understand." What is the tension here? So you tell me already, conceptually, what does the answer have to be? Before we get to Gemara's actual answer, but conceptually speaking, what is it? What's the Gemara's question? It's, I don't understand. You could say that it's not a mitzvah, and a Jew needs to do it. And so how? Why is it a problem? So what's the Gemara's answer going to have to assume? Why are these connected? As I just said, because maybe... Right, maybe if you think the creation of the object is a mitzvah, so that's why a non-Jew can't do it. That's why there's a standard, and that's why it's connected to bracha. Because if there's a mitzvah to create it, that means there's a status that the process itself is important, the creation of the object is important, and maybe therefore if you think a goy can make it, you don't need a bracha. If a goy can't make it, you do need a bracha. And that's why they should be conceptually linked. And that's what Gemara says. So my room, Yom Rav Yosef, Ksavar of Chista, because of Chista held, they call mitzvah Shekshirah Ba'ovit Kochavim B'Yisrael Ein Tzarech Levarech. Rav Chista thought that these are always equivalent. If a non-Jew can make it, there is no bracha. If a non-Jew can make it, there is a bracha. Ein Tzarech Levarech, Chavit Tzula Ba'ovit Kochavim B'Yisrael Tzarech Levarech. So at this stage in the Gemara, Rav Chista thinks that it's Oza Oza. Anything that needs a Jew, what does that prove? That the process of the creation of the object is halachically significant, and therefore what does it always need? A bracha. And therefore it's both or neither. Either a Jew has to do it and he has to make a bracha, or not. Right? At this stage, the Gemara assumes that they are the same. Now, can you challenge it?
Yes.
How would you challenge it?
Because, it could just be...
Right, this Gemara is a very beautiful conceptual Gemara, right? Meaning each stage of the Gemara, you see the way the Gemara is thinking. So what would be the challenge, right? Conceptually speaking, right? Why would you reject the equation of bracha to can a non-Jew make it? Meaning, how could you justify saying a non-Jew can't make it, but you still don't have a bracha? Conceptually.
Non-Jew...
Right, at this point in the Gemara quotes Rav Chista, who says, bracha is tied to whether you need a Jew to make it. But how could you say that I could have a case in which you don't have a bracha, and nevertheless,
a Jew has to make it.
What would you...
You can have a case where it has to be lishma, but you still make a bracha on that.
Meaning, You could say that what?
The
it's act, not a...
The act itself is not like the mitzvah. I guess the mitzvah is putting
good.
It on, but you still need the proper intent when doing
it. Right, meaning, or if we put it slightly differently, I would say, you can... The Havamin, or Chizda's position, is that the only type of process that has halachic requirements is a mitzvah. So bracha, you can have other requirements. No bracha, no requirements. But you can easily say no. You can have a process which is not right, which is halachically significant and therefore has halachic standards, but it's not a mitzvah. I mean, those aren't necessarily the same, right? You can have something which is not a mitzvah, but still halachically significant, still has standards. Like lishma, like a Jew needs to do it, and therefore they're not connected. So that's what the Gemara...
Like building a sukkah?
So that's what the Gemara says. Uklalahu. What does uklalahu mean?
Curse.
No, that's with a kuf. Right, look at the Gemara. Read it. Uklalahu. Question mark, exclamation point. What's that called again? A tarot bang, right?
Interrobang,
there we go. Question mark followed by an exclamation point is actually an interrobang. Interrobang. I was like trying to remember what that was, yes. An interrobang, right? Right? Because it's a question followed by a bang. I guess that's the logic there, right? Interrobang. So, uklalahu is an interrobang, right? Really? Is that a rule? Right? Mean really? And again, you can hear the Gemara asking. Because again, I want you to play through this. Gemara is beautiful conceptually, even before you get to the Chovas Gavra, Chovas Mana. The Gemara is saying, Rav Chisda's position is, if it's a mitzvah, then it can have halachic standards. If it's not a mitzvah, it can't have halachic standards. And therefore, if a goy can't make it, you have to make a bracha. If a goy can make it, no bracha. It's oza, oza. And the Gemara said, really? Uklalahu? Is that a rule? You can't imagine a case in which it's not a mitzvah to the point where you need a bracha, and yet you need halachic standards in terms of creating it? Right? That the process matters? Right? You can't imagine that this divides? Let me show you cases. So the Gemara says here, Hare Mila, right? In both directions, by the way. Right? In both directions. Right? You could have something that requires a bracha, but can have a guy do it because it's a mitzvah, but the mitzvah is result oriented, right? Think about it.
Still wouldn't be a bracha.
Let's play it out, right? Meaning, how would it go in both directions, right? How could you have something that needs a bracha, but a guy can do it? So that would be if it's result oriented, meaning the mitzvah is to bring about a certain result, and therefore you need a bracha because it's a mitzvah, but you don't need a Jew to do it because the process is less important than the end result. And the opposite is also true. You could have something where you don't need a bracha because it's not a mitzvah per se, but the process is halachically important and therefore requires a Jew, requires the Shema. It could go in either direction. So first the Gemara gives you the case of a bracha where a goy can do it. Right, a bracha where a goy can do it. And that is Hare Mila. Bris Mila. Dikshera Bovei Kohavim.
What?
Ditanya, because the Brayza says, Ir She'ein Ba Rofei Yisrael V'Yesra Rofei Armai. If you have no Jewish doctor, you only have a non-Jewish doctor. Again, I want to read this Gemara very carefully because conceptually this Gemara is beautiful. If you have a city which has a Jewish doctor, no Jewish doctor, only has a non-Jewish doctor, virofe kuti, yimol armai, val yimol kuti. If you have a choice between a kuti and an actual non-Jew, right? A kuti were these, people who converted under questionable conversions but continued to worship avodah zarah. The Gemara has a category called kuti. Right, kuti is basically there were people that in the time of Sancheirev, right? So we know Sancheirev. That's a no. So Sancheirev, when he conquered the northern territories, he kicked out the 10 tribes, right? Sennacherib in English, Sancheirev. And what did he do? He moved out the 10 tribes, and what did he do? What was the policy of Assyria? Okay, wait. Who is Sancheirev? Sancheirev is the king of Assyria.
Where they let Jews Jewish practice. But
wait one second. He's the no. That's much later. He's the king of Assyria. Assyria has a global empire.
Yes.
Right. They view themselves as the king of the world. Right. We have, if you last year at the British Museum, maybe you remember this. When I went to England, I went to the British Museum. They had an exhibit called "I Am Ashurbanipal, King of the World." Right. It was an exhibit of Assyria. So Sancheriv is the king of Assyria. And what does he do? So his policy, Daniel, is what? Is he going to make sure there's no rebellion?
Did he get rid of all the important people?
No, so that's Bavel's Svara. Right? How does Assyria do it? They move people. They take populations and they move them. So this way they don't know the territory. They have no commitment to the land. They have no reason to rebel. So that's why he takes the 10 tribes and he throws them into other lands. But what does he do? Now he has an empty country. So what does he do?
Bring in his own people.
He moves other people in. Right? He moves other people in. Now he tries to do this in Yehuda, in Yerushalayim, and it doesn't work. Because he destroys Yehuda, reaches Yerushalayim, and then who's the king in Yerushalayim and davens and ends up having a miracle? Chizkiyahu. Of course is right. Chizkiyahu is a superhero in Tanakh. Chizkiyahu, the story is so important that it gets told three times. In Malachim, in Yeshayahu, and in Divrei Hayamim. Three times, and it takes five pakim.
Doesn't Divrei Hayamim, though, kind of repeat mostly?
Correct, but it's this story is almost doubled or tripled in size in Divrei Hayamim. It's so long. It's many, many pakim. That's how much we like Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is like the man. It's not just, by the way, Tanakh that loves him. Let's see if you remember from last year. Who wrote a poem about the failed invasion of Yerushalayim?
Mark Twain.
No. Oh. Lord Byron. Lord Byron, the Romantics, wrote a poem, a very, very famous poem, among those who read Romantic poetry. But Lord Byron wrote it actually is a very, very famous poem. It is a poem that's so famous that it has been parodied by other poets. Like Ogden Nash wrote a parody of Lord Byron's poem on Sennacherib, right? It's a poem called "The Destruction of Sennacherib" by Lord Byron. Right? No, you've never heard this?
No. I mean, I've heard of Lord Byron.
The Assyrian came down like the wolf on the fold, and his cohorts were gleaming in purple and gold. And the sheen of their spears was like stars on the sea. No? Yeah, I mentioned it last year. Anyways.
They don't teach us these things in high school.
Great stuff, great stuff. Anyways, not the point. I mean, partially the point, but not fully the point. So, when Sancheirav did this, he moved people into Israel. Now, what happened? Those people, they were idol worshippers. So what happened when they worshipped idols? God sent lions to attack them. And at some point, they're like, "Oyve, what's going on?" So they decided, "Oh, we must be being attacked by lions because the local god, is angry at us because we are worshiping a foreign god." So they learn how to be Jewish, and they convert. But this conversion is a bit strange because
that's hilarious. Convert to Judaism because
they're being attacked by lions.
No, because you're not worshiping the local.
Whoa! So this is the question, Nero. So this is the question.
Israel.
Good. So this is
hilarious.
Yes. So this is the question in Tanakh: is there conversion? Well, in halal. So in Chazal, they now have machlokes. Who are these kutim? They're clearly gerim. But the question is: are they halachic gerim? Good. So later on, when we meet the kutim, we discover that they're still worshiping Hargreason. Right? They're still worshiping the mountains, they're worshipping whatever. The machlokes that therefore ensues in Chazal is, are they good converts who then, I mean, was it that originally they were sincere and then they reverted to idolatry, but now they're Jews because they actually converted, or, which is what we call Gerei Emet.
Their motive was always wrong.
So this is the machlokes in the Gemara. Motive doesn't actually matter. Lahalacha, it doesn't matter. It matters.
Why they're converted.
It doesn't matter.
So how could they have ever had good intentions?
Doesn't matter. You don't need good intentions. You need commitment. Lahalacha. We don't like taking people with bad commitment. But lahalacha, if you convert, with the intention to keep the mitzvot, motivation doesn't invalidate it. Meaning if you mean to keep the mitzvot, but you just do it for the wrong reasons, you're still converted.
But they can't be meaning to mean the mitzvot if the reason...
That's not true. If they're afraid they're going to be eaten by lions and they're willing to keep the mitzvot, they would be...
They're meaning to keep the mitzvot.
It's just because of lions.
Yeah. Is... Okay, but if you're...
I always thought this concept, though, that you're not supposed to...
You're not... No, you shouldn't accept them. But if they convert it, would it work?
Right.
Would it work?
Are they able to convert without... Like, do they have to convert through a rabbi? Or
so presumably, right... So this is the whole machlokes of the Gemara. What happened? Right? They're trying to work backwards. Because by the time they know the Kotim, the Kotim are idol worshippers. So the question is, are they Jews? Right? Who then went off the derech, reverted to their old ways? Or were they never really committed? Right, they were always worshiping. So the Gemara calls it the machlokas of whether kutim gerei emet or gerei arayot. Right, were they just converting because of lions, or did the lions get them to real commitment? Right, that's the machlokas in the Gemara. But there's this tense relationship with the kutim.
Well, did the lions stop?
Yes.
So then
yes.
It must have been emet.
Well, not necessarily. It could just be that God said, okay, well, now they're whatever, so that's enough. Again, this is it's a very complicated one of those things we're trying to work backwards from, in Tanakh, in Chazal. But the point is, the Gemara says, if I have a choice between a straight-out non-Jew, being the doctor who's going to give the bris milah, right, that's where we got into this, or a kuti, who's this gerei emet, gerei arayot, machlokes, etc., eventually we decide that they're gerei arayot.
We do.
Yeah, that's the conclusion, eventually, in Chazal. So, Rabbi Meir says, Yimol ar moy val yimol kuti. I'd rather have a goy, a straight up goy, be the moel and not a kuti. Divri Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda omer. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Kuti velo ar moy. I'd rather have a kuti than a straight up non Jew. Ubi Yisrael. So the Gemara says, so
why,
point one.
Why is a kuti, worst case scenario, they're like a non Jew? Best case scenario, they're Jew. Why
so we have this because we have this complicated relationship with Kutim, which is a straight non-Jew. It's not if you just get a doctor in the hospital to give a bris, no one's going to say, oh, he's giving a bris, that must mean he's a Jew. They'll just say he's a doctor. But if you have a Kuti doing it, you'll say, is he doing it because he's a doctor, is he doing it because he's a Jew? Right? It's always these borderline cases where we get more concerned, but I don't want to get into this. You give Kutim, I really It's a complicated story. You can see every time it comes up. You see this long Tosos, right? Va'al Yimol Kuti, right? 2/3 of the page is just Tosos trying to work this out again, right? Tosos every time it comes up tries to work this out. So he says point one is the Gemara is pretty explicit. Can a guy do a bris milah?
Yeah.
Do you make a bracha by bris milah if a Jew does it? Also, yes, that's the next line. Ubi Yisrael tzarech levarech. The Amar Mar Hamal, one who makes a who gives a bris milah, Omer Baruch Asher Kedisham Zadav Zivanu Al Hamilah.
No, but the,
have you ever been to a bris?
It's not a contradiction. Meaning the best.
It is a contradiction. According to Rav Chisda.
No, the best. Way
according to Rav Chisda.
No.
Daniel, according to Rav Chisda, it's not a contradiction.
Rav
Chisda says anything that a goy can do, there is no bracha. Anything a goy can't do, there's no bracha.
So I think if you interpret it a different way, meaning not
that's anything, what the Gemara is trying to do.
But not anything can do. It's anything if meaning if a goy does it, right? So he has the ability to. The best way is for a Jew to do it. But if you didn't have, let's say, a Jewish doctor, right? So you had the goy do it, then okay, he's allowed to, but there's no bracha. But the best case scenario is you have a Jew do it.
But Rav Chisda didn't say that. Rav Chisda said if a goy is allowed to do it, no bracha. A goy can't do it, bracha. Rav Chisda said it, and that's why the Gemara challenged it and said, "Uklalahu, is that really a rule?"
I don't know if it doesn't necessarily sound that he's applying it to everything, meaning...
That's the Gemara's question, Uklalahu. That's the Gemara's question. Uklalahu, is this a rule? That's the question, right? I mean, Uklalahu, the words literally mean... Remember, that was the interrobang. Is it really a rule? Right? So... The Gemara says, you see, now you're right, conceptually you could say, what's the problem? But that's why the Gemara is saying, but according to Chisda, it sounds like this is a rule. So what does the Gemara then say? Midi hu taima ela lirav, rav mifsal pasil. No, this is all within Rav. Remember, that was Rav was the person who started this whole discussion. And Rav, if so possible, Rav thinks that a goy cannot give a bris milah. De'itmar minayim milah bovei kochavim shepsula. How do you know that, according to Rav, you aren't allowed to have it? So, Daru Bar Papa, Mishmei de Rav, Daru Bar Papa says in the name of Rav. Where do we know Daru Bar Papa from? He's his son. Where do we say his name?
When we finish our Gemara.
Thank you, at Asiyum. Right? When we go through all of Rav Papa's sons, Daru Bar Papa, Rami Bar Papa, Rav Bar Papa.
Daru doesn't sound familiar, though.
Why do we do that?
Open to the back of the Gemara, you'll see. He's one of the people.
Why do we do that?
That's a very good question. I don't really know exactly. Something like, all his kids were really good examples, and we're davening for, I have to look up something like, we're davening that our kids should know Gemara and learn Torah, and all of his kids did, because as you see, Daru Bar Papa here is a
like the same type of thing where on Shabbos you get a bracha of Friday.
Yeah, I guess something like that. So Daru Bar Papa says the name of Rav, V'ata et briti tishmor, you keep my brit, meaning you Jews, and Yochanan Omer Himol Imol Hamol Yimo. And Rabbi Yochanan is a different drasha, which is, it says, Himol Yimo, which is, you shall surely give a bris milah, but he reads it as, Hamol Yimo. He who has a bris milah can give a bris milah. So now the Gemara says, okay, so at this stage.
A Jewish bris milah or?
A halachic bris milah, yes. So the Gemara says, at this stage, the Gemara says, is it, according to Rav Chisda, is it in fact the rule that if a guy can do it, no bracha, if a guy can't do it, bracha?
No.
Yes. According to Rav Chisda, because within Rav, Rav thinks in a Hanami, the only reason there's a bracha on bris milah is because a guy can't do it. And therefore, so far, we have a consistent shita, which is, again, bracha, only Jews. No bracha, can be non-Jews. Why? Again, conceptually, because it must be. Right? Either process matters and therefore it's a mitzvah, therefore you need a bracha. Process doesn't matter, not a mitzvah, no bracha. So then the Gemara says, but I have a contradiction. Sukkah misayile. And now the Gemara starts saying, wait a second. Sukkah.
The process matters.
Misayile will support this. Tfilin eviti yuvta. But tfilin will disprove it. Because hooray. Sukkah, dikshera b'ovid kochavim, ditanya, sukkah ovid kochavim, sukkah nashim, sukkah behema, sukkah kutiyim, sukkah mikalakom, kshera. A sukkah made by a goy, a woman, an animal,
sukkah made by an animal,
or whatever, of a kuti, is a sukkah. Yes, a monkey, I don't know.
Like to say an elephant standing, could it be?
No, no, being made by. By the way, this is, Rashefter loves telling this story. I've heard it from him so many times that he once got a shayla from a rabbi of a non-Orthodox shul. No, not the rabbi, I think the gabbai. The gabbai wanted to upschlug the, what's Yiddish for, whatever, like, disprove. Right, he wanted to, the rabbi, because the rabbi had gotten the non-Jewish janitor to build the sukkah in the shul on the bima. And the gabbai was like old school conservative, and like, right, and so like he was somewhat knowledgeable, or whatever, and he was like, oh, this is not right, and he wanted to prove his rabbi wrong. So he went to the Tershech there and he said, tell my rabbi he's wrong. A goy can't make a sukkah.
Well, that's not wrong.
And what did Rashefter say to him? No, he says, Beferish Gemara, goy can't make a sukkah. You have a bigger problem that neither of you realized, which was, you build it inside the house. That's Pasul Leguliyah, Mama. But you totally got this wrong. Right? The fact that it's inside that didn't bother you, that's Pasul Legamri. The fact that Goy built it is the Kasha of the Hadron. It's Sukkah's Gambach. It's an explicit Sukkah. It's a Sukkah in Sukkah, the Sukkah here, Monaco. So he says, Sukkah, a Goy is allowed to build it, and there is no bracha on building the Sukkah, according to the Bavli. The Yerushalmi
says
there's a bracha on Asiyat Sukkah. Because, and this is what the Nesiv argues, that the Yerushalmi holds of a category called Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuva B'Torah. That when the Hechsher Mitzvah is written in the Torah, itself has enough of a status to make a bracha. But the Yerushalmi, the Bavli, doesn't think this. So therefore, he says, this supports it, because is there a mitzvah, according to the Bavli, is there a mitzvah to build a sukkah?
Yeah. Yeah.
No. There's a mitzvah to live in the sukkah.
Well, there are specifications how to build it, though.
Yeah, yeah, but is there a mitzvah to build a sukkah? No. There's specifications, but there's no lishma, there's none of that.
Apply, though, meaning if there's a mitzvah to sit or sleep in a sukkah,
no, because the result
by default, you can't just have a sukkah, you need to build it, which is part of the mitzvah.
No, 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 that's not what the Bavli is assuming. At this stage, the Bavli is saying, there, it's clearly result-oriented. You need to have a sukkah because you need to live in it. But if there's, you had a sukkah left over from last year, do you have to build it? No. If a goy builds it,
it was a certain
if a goy builds it, is that fine?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, again, follow the logic of the Gemara. The Gemara says, sukkah supports this contention because there's no bracha and a goy can do it, which tells you what? That the mitzvah is to live in the sukkah, and therefore is there any mitzvah in building it?
No,
and therefore there's no bracha, and therefore a goy can build it and there's no bracha. That's what you get.
Granted, they say you can't eat the sukkah still, you should at least shake the stock.
That's a different sukkah. That's sukkah yeshana.
Just clarify.
That's sukkah yeshana. I don't want to get into sukkah yeshana right now, right? But that's sukkah yeshana. So he says, all of these are ksheira v'vachei mizukeches kelchaso v'yisrael ein tzarech levarech. And there's no bracha. D'tanya ha'osu sukkah la'atzmo omer baruch atah Hashem elokeinu melech haolam shehechiyanu v'kiyimanu v'hegiyanu l'zman hazeh. The only bracha that you would make on building a sukkah is potentially shehechiyanu, which we, our minhag is to have in mind when we say shehechiyanu on sukkahs, to have it in mind. Okay, fine. Bali sheva, when you come to actually sit in it, even though the simple pshat in the Gemara is that you should make a shechayanu on building it. Okay. But le sheva, amar bali sheva, when you come to sit in it, you say, Baruch atah Hashem lakin ma'acholam, asher kichanu mitzvah b'tzivanu, le shev ba'sukah, v'ilu la'asot sukah lo mevarech. So does sukkah support Rav Chisda's linkage of bracha and requiring a Jew, meaning believing that the process itself is important? Yes.
Yeah.
But the Gemara says, but tefillin, tiyufte, tefillin, disproves it. Why? Hare tefillin psulot bovde gochavim. Can a non-Jew make tefillin? Psulot, bovde, last line.
Right.
No. Ditani, rechinna bire dirava, mi pashranaya, right, which is someplace. Sefer Taru, Tfilin of Mezuzah, Shekhtavan, Tzduki, Kuti, Oveko, Chavim, Evet, Isha, Katan, Mumar, Psulen. Any of these people write Tfilin, it's Pasol. Shneemar, Ukshartem, Ukhtavtem. Because there's a special rule by Tfilin, which we'll have to see whether it's true by Tzitzis. Right, by Tfilin, we know the answer. Can a woman be a soferet stam for Tfilin? No. Because kol sheyeshno bikshira yeshno biktiva, kol sheeino bikshira eino biktiva. Only someone who is allowed, who has to put on tefillin, is allowed to write tefillin. Uvi Yisrael. So
isn't there an argument that women can't write tefillin? Like
they definitely don't have to.
They don't have to, but they can, like in private.
So the Gemara, so there's a different versions between Bavli and Yerushalmi of whether a woman who comes to wear tefillin mochen biyadan or ein mochen biyadan. Do you stop them from doing it, or you don't stop them from doing it?
I was reading Rabbi Brody's book.
Correct.
But it says that in private they can't.
So that's machlokas. It's machlokas. Right, comes down. These sugyas, and why shouldn't they be wearing it? Is it beged ish? Is it yuhara?
Right, because it is in private, there's no...
Etc. Yes, exactly. The big sugya, don't want to get into it. Maybe the tzitzis one we will, but not the tefillin. So, can a goy make tefillin?
No.
Do you make a bracha on making tefillin?
I don't know.
Also, no. V'Yisrael ain't tzarech levarech. T'shalach r'b'chia b'rei d'rav huna mishmei d'rav Yochanan. Al tefillin shel yad. When you put on your tefillin shel yad, what do you say? Omer baruch asher k'disham z'dav v'tzivanu l'haniyech tefillin. Al tefillin shel rosh. Omer baruch asher k'disham z'dav v'tzivanu al mitzvah tefillin. That's what Ashkenazim do. That we say two bracha.
We say two also if it's between two.
Correct. That's how Sephardim read the sugya, which is only if you have a hefsek between shalyat, right? The Sephardi way of reading this is if you are mafsek between it, then you say two separate brachot. But if you aren't mafsek, you say one bracha. The Ashkenazi minhag is to
say
two brachot always.
And then say brachot.
and say Baruch Shem as a suffix, because we're not sure you're supposed to make that bracha. Exactly. V'ilu la'asot tefillin lo mivarech. But to make tefillin, you don't make a bracha. So therefore, does this disprove the linkage between bracha and whether a goy can make it?
I don't know. It doesn't necessarily disprove it. I don't know.
The goy can't make it. You don't make a bracha. Rav Chisda said, anything a goy can't make a bracha.
I think there's a different way to read it. I think
Stop. Wait. I'll hear you in a second. At this stage in the Gemara, does the Gemara assume that this disproves it?
On paper, yes.
Not in paper. At this stage in the Gemara, does the Gemara assume it disproves it?
On paper, yes.
No. At this stage in the Gemara... What?
With tefillin.
Yes. Because the Gemara says a goy can't make it and you don't make a bracha.
Right.
So, good.
That.
So, you're intuiting the answer. The Gemara is going to say, you're right, the rule is not what you said it was. But at this stage in the Gemara is assuming that Rav Chisda's rule is essentially what? Anything a goy can make, you don't make a bracha. Anything a goy can't make, you don't make a bracha. You do make a bracha. And why? What's the conceptual logic of it?
Because there's a mitzvah on the...
If it's a mitzvah to create, so then there's a bracha, and therefore a goy can't do it. And if there's no mitzvah to create, so then a goy can do it, because there's no standards. The Gemara's answer is going to be, the rule is not that. What's the rule?
That something that a goy can create, there is no bracha on it, because there is no mitzvah on the mitzvah, clearly. But you can have a mitzvah on the maisa, right? So a goy can't do it, but that doesn't mean that it requires a bracha. Like in this case.
Good. So what the Gemara's answer is going to be, is Ella. This is where we switch directions. Right? Until now, the Gemara was assuming anything a goy is allowed to make that proves it's not a mitzvah. And anything a goy can't make that proves that the creation is itself a mitzvah. Those are the only two categories. But then the Gemara says, but tefillin disproves it. Because you need a Jew to create it. And yet he doesn't make a bracha, which tells you what? Before we look at the Gemara's answer, it tells you that what? Bracha is about what? Right. When do you make a bracha, Daniel? Only if it's a...
When you're doing it.
Mitzvah. But can you... What determines whether a goy can make it or not?
Is there a specification?
Whether the process is halachically significant. And you could theoretically have something where the process... is significant, but it's not a mitzvah.
But by tzitzis. Right.
Oh, so now the Gemara says, by tefillin, well, we haven't got, right? This is all getting back to tzitzis. Remember, this is one very long Gemara, which gets back to tzitzis, but we haven't gotten there yet. So the Gemara says, so by tefillin, what's the halacha? Elalav hainu taima. This is the reason. Kol mitzvah da'asiyata gmar mitzvah kigon milah. Listen to this phrase. This is a very lamdish phrase. If by time you have finished the act, you have performed the mitzvah, then you have a bracha. Even if a guy doesn't. So he says, Bris Milah, how do you conceptualize it? Why is it that by Bris Milah, a goy might be allowed to do it?
If
a Jew does it, you make a bracha.
It's on.
Because the mitzvah is the result. It's result-oriented. So if a Jew does it, does he make a bracha? Obviously, because he's brought about a mitzvah. But why can a goy do it even though there's a bracha?
It's about the result.
Because it's about the result, and therefore...
It's on the result, so he could do it, but he can't... There's no bracha because...
No, but if a Jew would do it, there would be a bracha. Meaning, it's a mitzvah, but a goy can still do it. Meaning, now the Gemara breaks it and says, this is wrong, right? You can have things which are clearly mitzvot, but a goy can do. And those are called result-oriented mitzvahs, what the Gemara calls... the Gemara... is the raise the bracha, and what could you have? You could have something where the result is important, the process is important, but there's no bracha, and a goy can't make it. Why? Because the process is important, but not because it's a mitzvah, like tefillin. Meaning, the Gemara ends up saying there are two standards here. Goyim can't do that which The process and not the result is important. Right? Whether or not a goy can do it is about, is this process halachically significant? Bracha is about, is this process a mitzvah or not? So you could cut it in both ways.
So there's three stages for them, right? But there's process, there's result, and then there's after that even the act of doing it.
Good. So now the Gemara therefore says, Mila, the result, is it a mitzvah? 100%.
Yes.
Do you need a bracha therefore?
Yes.
Can a goy do it?
Yes.
Possibly because, my chokas, but possibly because if it's result oriented, so maybe a goy can do it even though it's clearly a mitzvah. Right. But you could also have the opposite, where is making tefillin a mitzvah?
Yes.
Making tefillin a mitzvah?
No.
But is the process significant halachically?
Yes.
So do you make a bracha on making tefillin? No. Can a goy make it? Also no. Because these are not related questions. And here it fails both.
Why can't...
Meaning, because you could have things which are...
That contradicts Mila.
No, because once we break it...
The process of Mila is significant too.
No, that's what we're saying. It's not. The result of having a bris Mila is important.
So you can cut it any way you want?
That's what the Gemara is saying.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Right, that's exactly what the Gemara is saying, is that the... It sounds like it's saying, again, we have to get more thoroughly into Mila. But at least the simplest shot here is the Gemara is saying, look, asiyata, Gemara asiyata mitzvah, meaning having a Mila, that's the mitzvah. And therefore, if a Jew is doing it, as he's giving the bris Mila, is he performing a mitzvah? Yes, he's bringing about the desired result. But if a goy does it, is it possible that it's mutter? Yes. Now remember, it's a machlokes. If a non-Jew can do it. What seems to be the machlokas about whether a non-Jew can do it? Whether it's only result-oriented or not. Right? Meaning, now which way do we paskin, by the way?
In terms of what?
Whether a guy can give a mila or not. So we say in our mo'i, shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right? We have Jews do it, right? Kuti velo our mo'i.
Oh, right, because we said their conversion wasn't good.
Well,
so then
remember, this is my focus in the Gemara and what's going on.
I thought we said
actually, I have to look up whether we Paskin Jew. I'll look it up. But the Gemara says it's possible that bris mila yavo bracha and you won't have, but you won't allow a goy to do it because giving a bris mila is clearly the mitzvah, but it's result oriented. But tefillin, you could have the opposite, which is, meaning, what's the Gemara really saying? Bracha is about, is this a mitzvah? Whether a goy can do it is it process oriented or result oriented? And the Gemara is saying by tefillin, is the process necessary?
Yes.
How do I know? Because I need lishma and things like that. Meaning the process of creating tefillin is itself halachically significant.
That's what you can.
And therefore a goy can't do it. But is the process of tefillin a mitzvah process?
No,
wearing it is the mitzvah, and therefore, by tefillin, a goy can't make it, but there's no mitzvah. By mila, it's result-oriented, according to the sheets and the Gemara, but when you do it, it's clearly a mitzvah, because the mitzvah is immediate. Right? I've brought about the result, so I'd say a mitzvah.
It's pretty crazy to say that by mila, because mila is literally arguing with God, and then here you can have a...
Correct, and it's a machlokas in the Gemara itself.
So, the idea of it, the reason behind the mitzvah, just so
it's radical in a chanami, it's radical. So now the Gemara says, right? So now all of this was a background, right? Now all of this was a background, and now the Gemara says, how does this play into the question of whether you say the bracha of lasot tzitzit? So now tell me, what's the machlokes?
If the process is halachically significant, which it is. But is that a mitzvah, or is the mitzvah just that?
So is what he says. Good.
Not
so he's
the end result, but putting it on.
Oh, exactly. The Gemara says, wait a second. Bracha, what's the role by bracha? Is this creating this thing in front of us, right? Creating the mila, is that a mitzvah? It's a mitzvah. It may be result oriented, but the mitzvah is having the mila. It's not delayed, as opposed to tefillin, where creating the tefillin is important, but it's not the mitzvah. So he says, okay, so he's making tzitzit a mitzvah. So he says, well...
Tefillin and tzitzit should be the exact same thing.
tefillin is clearly chovat agafra. Clearly chovat agafra. There's no mitzvah to have tefillin, a mitzvah to wear tefillin. And that's why the Gemara says you clearly don't make a bracha on making tefillin. But yes, the process is important. But a goy doesn't make it. But now the Gemara says, what's the real question of tzitzis? Of whether you make a bracha on asiyas tzitzis? What's the real question? What is it? Is it like tefillin wear what?
Or it's just to wear it.
The pshat or the pasuk?
Wait, one second. Just spell this out, then ask your question. Now the Gemara's question, now it comes into sharper relief. Why, if it's like tefillin, and therefore you don't make a brach on making it, why is that? Because you think the mitzvah is what?
To wear it.
To wear it, and therefore making tzitzis is no different than making tefillin. I've created a chetzis shel mitzvah.
Non-Jew can't make it, but there's no brach.
But there's no brach. Leave aside the Jew, non-Jew. But the point is, there's no brach on making it because this is not the Gemara Siyo. Because the mitzvah, Gemara mitzvah rather, because the mitzvah is wearing. And why? What would you need to say in order to say you make a bracha on making tzitzis?
That it's on the process.
No, that it's Gemara Siyo. That the process of the mitzvah has finished as soon as I've made the tzitzis.
Right.
And therefore, the Gemara says
both. That is on the end result.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And that's what we're going to see. But before we get to the mixed position, I wanted to see the simple pshat in the Gemara. And now the Gemara says, Ubeha kamiflagi. Right? This is what they're arguing about. What's they're arguing about? Mar savar chovat talit hu. Mar savar chovat gavra hu. The machlokes is, is it a chovat gavra or chovat talit? If you think that it's a chovat gavra, simple pshat means that the mitzvah of tzitzis is what? To wear tzitzis. Then it's like tefillin. Where when I make the tzitzis, is that the end of anything? No, I've created a chetzis shel mitzvah, but I haven't done a mitzvah. So then do you make a bracha v'lasot tzitzit? No. But if you think the mitzvah is chovat talis, which means that I start to fulfill the mitzvah when? As soon as I have tzitzis on the beged, right? That's the simplest shot here.
Is that one corner or all four?
All four. Meaning all four corners. That as soon as I put tzitzis on the beged.
So there's no significance.
That was machlokes lamed zayin. Remember?
Yeah.
So, but the way we paskin, all four. So then, if the mitzvah is not to wear tzitzit, but any four-cornered garment I have has to have tzitzit on it, whether I'm wearing it or not. So then, is the act of putting tzitzis on the beged at the end of a process?
Yes.
Is it the end of a mitzvah?
No.
Yes. According to Chovat Talit.
Yes.
And therefore, do you make a bracha?
Yes.
And that's the machlokes in the Gemara. Now, what about a goy? Can a goy make it? So, Amar Leib Mordechai, L'Ravashi, Atun Achi Matnin Lani Achi Matnin La. This is how you learn it. This is how we learn it. Amar Leib Mordechai, Now, let's do it. Shik Sheirosh, Nemar Daber, Al B'nei Yisrael, Asulam Tzitzit, Yasul Lahem Acherim. But can goy make it? So, according to this position, yes. Meaning, it's exactly like Mila, where the process is not important, but the result is a mitzvah. Chovat, if you hold chovat talit. So this whole long discussion got to the following machlokes, where the Gemara says, what is the machlokes about whether you say the bracha of la so tzitzit or not? Is putting the tzitzit on the beged the end of the mitzvah? If you think that wearing tzitzit is the mitzvah, so then, is this the end of the mitzvah process? No. If you think that the mitzvah is to have tzitzit on your begadim, wherever they may be, is this the end? 100%. Then there's the secondary question, is can a goy make it? And the answer is, machlokes. But remember, we said that you can have a machlokes whether a goy can make it, right, regardless of whether you think it's a mitzvah, right? Because tefillin, making the tefillin is not a mitzvah, but you can't have a goy do it. Mila is a mitzvah, but you can't have a goy do it. Because there, the question is process versus the result. And here you have a machlokes. That the beginning of the Gemara says, are you allowed to have a goy tie tzitzis? No. And the second day in the Gemara is, can you have a goy tie tzitzis? Yes. What's their machlokes? Is the process significant? Or is it just that you need to have tzitzis by the end? But chovat gavra, chovat mana.
If you look at the pasuk itself,
it sounds very much like the process is important.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, because it talks nothing about wearing it. It just talks about how to make it. You attach it, you put on tchela, like it's all about the process.
Very good. And then the Gemara in the Psukim in Dvarim, we talked about completely about Beged. Gidilim tasalach barba kanfas kusut chashat chasaba. Right? You should have tzitzit on your Beged. So here's the Gemara's machlokes. And you saw this is a large piece of Gemara. We've just read through it. Right, just to get the general conceptual contours of the Gemara. But the Gemara here says that the nafka mina between chovas talis and chovas gavra is.
Well, does the process matter and the end result?
What's the nafka mina? Lemaisa, what's the nafka mina? What was the nafka mina that the Gemara was? This whole Gemara was about one nafka mina, which is.
If it's a mitzvah.
Come on. Bracha!
Right.
Bracha, lasot tzitzit, that's the nafkamina. Right, for the Gemara. What is the other nafkamina? And this is the Gemara Mem Aleph. What the Gemara is going to call, maybe we'll do this tomorrow. Do you want to do this tomorrow? But let me just lay it out. What's the Gemara's second nafkamina? What's called? Klei Kufsa. Meaning, tefillin that you just have, tzitzis that you just have sitting in your drawer. A beged in your drawer. Do you have to put tzitzis on it even if you're not going to wear it? Or if you're not wearing it?
You eventually will, though.
Not necessarily.
Well, it's a beged.
Well, maybe.
Otherwise,
depending on how much you integrate it.
Meaning?
I outgrew it.
Lama said we're not just retying tzitzis onto our begeds.
Huh?
You're asking the comments that you have only one.
You have a four-cornered beged sitting in your drawer. Do you have to have tzitzit on that, whether or not you're going to wear it?
Mm-hmm.
Chovat gavra? No. Chovas talis?
Yes.
Presumably yes. And now you'll tell me, oh, well, obviously we paskin.
No.
No, and that is not true. And that's why I gave you all these rishonim. They don't expect you to read all of them, but many, many, many rishonim paskin chovas talis. Chovas talis. Many, many Rishonim. This is not at all an open and shut case where we paskin like one or the other.
Well, okay, for your sake, every single blanket in your house has to have tzitzis?
Potentially. Depending on the machlokas we saw last week.
In theory, you could sleep with it.
Bidyuk. According to...
That's
tough.
Meaning according to Rebbe Eliyahu. According to Rebbe Eliyahu, yes. Right? Rebbe Eliyahu quoted in the Hagos Maimini, yeah, that would mean that every single blanket in your house, whether you're going to wear it or not going to wear it. But if, right, even those blankets that you never have on you during the day, presumably would need tzitzis. Right? They would need tzitzis. No chanami. It wouldn't matter. Not just your blanket, any blanket you have. Again, we saw other defenses of that. The Mordechai's position, which is that a blanket is not worn. It's just put on top of you. And that would be a different defense. But theoretically, yes, according to Rebbe Eliyahu, that would be the case.
I have a cool...
Yeah.
Okay, right. We did earlier on Mem Aleph, right, that something with buttons, if they're sewed with buttons, right, or they're held together with buttons, that doesn't need... Is this right?
Wait, do we do buttons? I don't think we've done buttons.
Depends, I think. Where was it?
I think we're going to have to do Mem Aleph tomorrow.
Here, Tanarban Talas Kenfua Chayav Batitis, Rabbi Shimon Pater, Veshevayin Sheim Kefala Vetifera, right? Shechayavet.
If you sew it up.
Right. Tifer Pshita, right? It's obvious. Lo, Tsricha Dinat Kata Besichi. If it's attached with pins.
Good. So let's do this Gemara tomorrow because, right? Meaning this is a whole other Gemara, and I feel like we're gonna be rushed.
It's like separate, but like I'm just curious.
Okay.
Does that count as it being together or not?
So that's what it is. So, but right, it meaning there it's more
Is it considered one begad? Like sewed together or not?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So right. In general, I mean, we're going to get to it. It's a complicated sugya. There's a lot of different factors there also. But let's do the... So we did one Gemara, of Chovas Gavra Chovas Mana, where the Gemara said the Nafkamina is Bracha. What we'll do tomorrow is do the second Gemara on Mem Aleph and Mem Aleph. Chronologically, it's first, but... and then we'll see. Now, again, I don't expect you to read everything here. These Rishonim get into the question of Psak. I would see the Gemara in Brachot, which is number 10, right? Which is the Gemara where it says, what Bracha do we actually make? And this is where some of the Rishonim draw their conclusion from. And if you want to see a hybrid position, so the Rav is a nice hybrid position. I gave you that. You can look at, since you like reading the Rav's book on it, on page Reish Dalit, Reish Zion. But we'll pick this up tomorrow. This will probably take us 3 days. I would say this sugya, it's a bit, it's a broad sugya, as you see. Like this Gemara, that was a long piece of Gemara.
Yeah.
And analyzing it carefully was good.